The DeFalco Files is an entertainment-based program. Some memories of certain events might be fuzzy. All opinions are that of the host. Content might not be appropriate for children and some adults. Listener discretion is advised. And remember, the truth is here. Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting presents The DeFalco Files with FSW owner Joe DeFalco and your host, Matt Michaels.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels here on The DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of FSW Future Stars of Wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, how you doing?
Hanging in, getting ready to actually not have to do anything but watch wrestling this week.
When guys go to something like Tampa for WrestleMania week, do you follow any of that? Where, you know, maybe you catch the Unguided on GCW or anything like that, or do you just kind of see them post things and just kind of see what's been going on?
Yeah, it's more or less about them posting, and that's how you see. You know, I saw one flyer that has Funny Bone and Remy Marcel on it, and Super Beast, who we don't really use, but we know well in the area. And you see those shows, and, you know, obviously guys like Jay Vidal and the Bad Bitches, they're excited. They're getting to do some stuff. So whether I see it or not, you know, Jay's letting me know, hey, we're going to be on this show and we're doing this and we're going to be in Tampa. Because, you know, with Lacey Ryan gone, the new click is, we won't even talk about the new click. Might mess up future storylines.
and it's really cool to see Bad Bitches getting an opportunity to be on Effie's show, which is phenomenal exposure for them. GCW is going to be where you can catch Matt and Damian Drake. And then you're referring to Generation Championship Wrestling, who we have a little bit of a working relationship with. The Vegas Bad Boys is, you know, kind of put out a little sponsorship for them. Remy and Funny Bone and Super Beast. So it's amazing how many opportunities people are getting. When you think of overall the experience of doing something like this, where it's a concentrated, everyone is there for this reason, whether it be, you know, different companies or different wrestlers, of course, the fans. How important is it for a young wrestler to, if they get booked on something like this, to make as many connections as possible? Is this something that can really benefit, especially if people are seeing you live for the first time? Is this something that could benefit you in the long run?
Well, you got to remember, 5 or 10 years ago, that's not how it was. It's like, if you got booked, you wanted your flight paid for and you were going to fly in. And as bigger indie companies have continued to grow, the exposure is, you know, most important to a lot of the younger talent. You know, that's why we're lucky enough to get guys like Tyson Maddox and Brian Idol and whoever else it is that, you know, have kind of made a name for themselves in their areas in wrestling that they want to branch out. So, you know, I saw Estrella's there. You know, everybody's, you know, making bets on themselves.
Sure.
And that's the most important thing is it's like they're going there and they may have one booking. They may have no bookings, but they're trying to get noticed because there are thousands and thousands of of wrestlers. And, you know, the ones that want the hungry ones, the ones that are always looking to eat, are going to be the ones who bypass other people who they may not be as good as.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's like, if I am doing a show at WrestleMania in Tampa, and for example, I love Eli Everfly. Just throw his name out there. If Eli Everfly is not coming to Tampa, it's not a wise business decision to fly him in from California and then pay his rate when there's, instead of 300 wrestlers to choose from, now I have 800 to choose from that are already there. And bottom line is, we're still trying to run a business and trying to make money. So unless you're going down there, it becomes, you know, very difficult for a, you know, good wrestler who's looking to get exposure to think that he's going to get flied to Florida. It just isn't going to happen.
Right.
You know, there's too many people in the, you know, from all over the United States. You know, it used to be all the fans. Now the wrestlers have, you know, taken that. And that's why GCW is involved with running 20 different shows.
Right.
And there's so many opportunities for people to get noticed. But the thing is, you know, it isn't like you're going to go there and now you go on GCW and now you're the big breakout superstar. But now you might be able to get some people to now fly you that didn't know who you were because they thought you were a good person. They thought you wrestled well. They thought you did good business. And you're somebody that they would want in the locker room. And, you know, Jay Vidal's in a good situation because he does still have his connections in Florida,
right,
with Grell Academy. So he knows a lot of people. But, you know, the WrestleMania crew and the GCWs and the other stuff, they're not based out of Florida. So there's a lot of companies that are from all over the Northeast and the Southeast and the Southwest that are heading over there to run one show, three shows, 10 shows. And, you know, if they can get on there, then it only helps them in the long run, because right now, how many shows are really going on? There's probably more shows going on next week than have for the entire year.
Right.
So, you know, I guarantee you, you know, there's shows at 11 a.m., 4 p.m., 7 p.m., and 11 p.m. You know, you can wrestle 15 times during the week without breaking a sweat. So, you know, obviously the money's there. It was successful, you know, a couple of years ago. I remember Impact ran a show.
Right.
And, you know, lots of companies, Ring of Honor's run shows on WrestleMania week, you know.
Right.
Nobody can deny the drawing power of WrestleMania.
Right.
You know, I was hoping we'd get it at Allegiant Stadium. And once we did, you know, my goal was to try to lock up some venues and lock up as many, you know, places and use the FSW arena for 3 days of shoots.
Yeah.
You know, I rented it at 2 and at 6 and at 10. And, you know, we would do well out here. You know, we have a TV studio. There's not that many of them.
Right.
You know, at the time, you know, hey, we need Samstown for that Friday and Saturday. You know, we'll pay the rate and then sublease it out to include our, you know, our own shows mixed in with, you know, I remember a few years ago in WrestleMania, all the guys we dealt with, you know, Tommy Dreamer, he had a show there. Impact, they had a show there. You know, Sammy
right.
Callahan, he had a show there. You know, there was tons of people that we dealt with. That, you know, Joey Janela, hey, spring break, you want to do it at our place? You know, we didn't need the guardrails. It would be a Natural Born Killers type show where they could pack in, you know, 250 people.
Right.
And, you know, we would probably give way better pricing than renting a ring and then having to go to Sam's Town or some other place for, you know, a lot more pricing than we would do.
Right.
So I'm hoping in my lifetime we get the WrestleMania in Vegas. And you know, that would probably be, that week alone would probably be able to substantiate us, I would think, for the entire year.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And hopefully we will see it, you know, within the next maybe 3 years right after they do LA. That would be nice. But then again, they, you know, if Vince is still around, he likes to run stuff like Dallas and New Orleans over and over. So when you think of young breakout talent, is it important for, like, someone like Strella, when she goes there, she has such a unique look. Is it important for them to be able to adapt their character a little bit in terms of working the style of, you know, maybe you're booked on a show. Let's say she's booked on something on Friday afternoon and then something at Friday night. Is it important for you to be able to, you know, go into each of those shows with obviously listening to what the promoter wants, but still not being able to necessarily sacrifice your character just to, you know, do a one-off for a company? How do you think that kind of fits into a young person's growth in the business?
Well, let's make a comparison instead of just dealing with the one. Okay, let's do Strella and Sandra Moon. Okay, Sandra Moon's further along in her development. But the difference is, size-wise and look-wise, Sandra could go on one show and be the heel, and she could go on the other show and be the baby face,
right,
and it's fine. But as big as Strella is, and even though she's extremely inexperienced, you know, you would want somebody who looks like her, a monster, a killer, you know, to probably be a heel to wrestle one of your, you know, underdog baby faces.
Right.
You know, if she had to put somebody over, you know, it's probably easier for her to do that as a heel also. So, you know, she comes out strong, bing, bang, boom, and somehow the underdog baby face that your company's promoting, you know, goes over.
Right.
You know, we just did our women's show, and, yes, you know, we had a couple of our younger girls, you know, Alice Blair and Dana Lynn. Okay, Alice has kind of been in between, and, you know, she teamed with Damian Drake, and it's like, hey, would she be a good fit for the Unguided? Oh, is she a face? Is she a heel? I'm like, right now, it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah.
You know, she's 10 matches under her belt. If I say you're now a heel, that would mean she could only wrestle baby faces in most cases.
Right.
So that would stunt her growth. It's like, could she be possibly somebody in the Unguided? Yeah, but not for a long time. She just needs to get matches. She needs to get better.
Right.
She needs to learn her character. And to throw her in, you know, a main event group, you know, with her inexperience, you know, is kind of difficult. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, where do you go from that situation? While, you know, a Maserati, you know, she comes across as...
All right. I've heard enough. Unless it's talking about me, then that's all I want to hear. And let me tell you who it is. Live on the Vegas Bad Boys podcast, it's none other than the 2021 Rookie of the Year, Mr. Brett the Threat himself. And I have a lot to talk about, Mr. Joe Del Falco. I have a lot to talk. First question is, who is your pick for Rookie of the Year? Because it's obviously nobody else. It's obviously me.
Well, being that we didn't run shows and we're only in April, there's still a long way to go. And how did this clown get on the show?
I have no idea, man. This is fucked up.
Hey, man, listen. When you don't have security as good as Brett the Threat, sometimes maybe someone is smart enough to infiltrate it. So maybe next time you want to have a better password lock. But that's besides the point. Let's get to talking about the Rookie of the Year, which is obviously going to be me. I mean, I couldn't imagine any of these other clowns being rookie of the year. I mean, who do we even have to even contend for? Nick Zander? I destroyed him in Utah. Davion, Bodie, I took them out in 3 seconds. So you tell me, who possibly could be a rookie of the year?
I don't know. Maybe Strella can whoop your ass.
Well, we can see about that. But I also want to hit on the fact of, you know, Joe, he's been putting me in some very weird situations in the fact of who I've been wrestling against. Like, I've wrestled against Funny Bone when I was supposed to be in a six-man. And I don't do six-mans. I don't do pre-show matches, especially with guys like a Brandon G or a Nick Zander, because they're nowhere near my level. I'm at the level of an Ice Williams. I'm actually further than that level. But I want to know why Bret the Threat hasn't gotten a title shot yet. Because you've seen what I did to the Nevada State champion, Remy Marcel. I tore his arm off. I tore his ACL out of his freaking kneecap. So you tell me, with the experience that I have now, I've been traveling around the world. I've been traveling all around the United States. And I'm undefeated in my playbook. So I think Remy Marcel is next up for Bret the Threat.
Well, you know, as we jokingly talk about you when you're not around in most cases, and sometimes when you are around, you know, being the Conor McGregor wannabe that you are, you talk a great game and you definitely got some skills, but, you know, we did give you good competition. We gave you Remy Marcel. We gave you Hyper Streak. We gave you Dave Mizani. You didn't win any of those matches. Then you got put in a six-man tag, and then you complained about that. So then the next time you were in it, you decided you didn't want to be, so you wanted a singles match. Well, you went around me because you didn't go above me with Rocky T. You went around me, and Rocky found a suitable replacement. He asked me if we had another room for a match, so I said, sure. And he goes, well, Bret the Threat, he's been talking a big game. Maybe we'll, you know, humble him a little. And then after Funny Bone whipped your ass, it didn't humble you at all. So, you know, and now you're suspended because of your own doing. You know, I wasn't even involved in any of this. You and Rocky had a little love fest going on. And, you know, you decided to attack a couple of our younger guys because you were offended that you weren't put on the show. So, you know, where do we stand right now? I don't know. Yes, you and Rocky got to figure that out.
Well, I can tell you where I stand right now. I'm wearing a $300,000 pair of shades, a $1 million robe, and I got the hottest selling poster in Las Vegas today in my hands. So whether I'm suspended or not, it really doesn't make a damn to me, because Bret the Threat's the number one merchandise seller on the market. You know, when you don't put me on the show, the ratings drop to an all-time low. And you definitely know that if you put me in the ring with Rocky T, it's going to be bad, bad news, because I'm going to rip the pins and screws and needles and whatever he has in his back or knees. I'm pretty sure he's got screws and rods in every single joint, because the man's probably 70 years old. I think you're actually a little younger than him. I even think you're maybe a little bit more agile. Maybe even the Vegas Bad Boys podcast guys could probably even do better than he could. So he stands no chance against Bret the Threat. But after I'm done, if he even decides to finally step up to me, because I want Rocky T, I'm tired of him absolutely disgracing my name and my reputation. I'm tired of him booking me in matches against Funny Bone. Are you kidding me? That dude's a creep. You think someone like me needs to be even touching that guy? He needs to be absolutely 24 feet apart, not 6 feet, 24 feet apart. So Rocky T, when I come back, you have it coming to you, and it's going to be absolute hell to pay. And then after Rocky T, let me get on to what I was getting to. I think once I beat him, I mean, there's no question.
What are you talking about? Beating a guy who doesn't wrestle? What, that's an accomplishment? What are you even talking about?
Absolutely. Everything I do is an accomplishment. We should have a celebration party for everything I do. And especially on my radar is Remy Marcel and Ice Williams, because they're the champs, and I know damn well I've already taken out Remy Marcel. He won when I got distracted by some idiot casino sloth that was telling me how good I looked. I looked over, and all of a sudden, he hits me with a Northern Lights suplex, and then he pins me, and he grabbed the tights when he pinned me, too. So this match, I feel we would have to make a stipulation to make it fair on my part, because I got screwed, just like every single other loss. Dave Mazzani, I was whipping his ass until the end, and then I got screwed. Funny
bone. Screwed. You got screwed. Every time you wrestled, you got screwed. Well, maybe you should pay attention and focus on the in-ring stuff instead of worrying about the fans. You know, you've had four of those matches, and you've made an excuse why you lost all four. You didn't win one. You didn't win two. You didn't win three and lost one. You got a different excuse for every single match you lost, which is pretty much most of the matches you've been in. You know, why should you be the rookie of the year? Your record's like 1-7. What are you talking about?
I'm on a two-win streak right now, Joe. Like, I don't know what Nico, you put me last minute against some North Cal casino sloth, and he came down and he got the business, and I haven't seen him since. I'm pretty sure he's still in hiding somewhere in North Cal. Who Nick Zander, I had to travel 6 hours for 5 minutes. So, like, these matches end quick. They don't go long with me. So I know someone against someone like Remy. There is nothing that scares me about Remy Marcel. There's nothing that scares me about Ice Williams. They talk a lot. They 6 miles deep, 8 miles out, whatever the little catchphrase they say is, or ice, ice, ice. But Bret the Threat will melt all of that off. Because when I take the No Limit, the Nevada State, and hell, even move on to the heavyweight champion, because I'm going to be the fastest rising champion in history, I'll have one belt here, one belt here, and one belt here. And there will be no choice but for you to recognize me as not only Rookie of the Year, but as the marquee wrestler of FSW. So what do you have to say about that, Joe? Please tell me. I mean, I'm not telling lies. I'm very humble.
Oh, you done yet?
Yeah.
Are you done?
Yeah.
You know, okay, just making sure you're done. You know, I didn't want to interrupt your cavalcade of misinformation that you're providing everybody. So, that's great that you have a very high opinion of yourself in this business. That's what you definitely need. And there's no doubt you have lots of skills. You know, you came out of the training academy, and you and Nick Zander were pretty much the, the class of the class, I guess you could say. You know, you guys were the ones who stood out, and, you know, both of you seem to be on the road to success. While Nick's been extremely humble and hardworking, you're hardworking, but you're not very humble. And, you know, with your time in the business, you know, I'd like to say to people, you know, keep the eyes open and the mouth shut, but obviously you didn't get that memo.
Why would I do that? Because I'm the best in FSW. So when you're the best, you need to let people know that you're the best. And don't ever say Nick Zander's name in a sentence with Bret the Threat, because we came up at the same time, but I'm miles ahead of him in just everything, and especially in the ring. And we found that out in Salt Lake City. And I also want to say, if you ever so dare, and this is for the Vegas Bad Boys, I don't know his name. What's his name? Mike? Jake? Whatever his name is.
You know, it is written right on the screen. So if you actually take your sunglasses off, maybe you can't see very well. But it says Matt.
Well, Mike, I have something for you. I have a lawsuit that will go in action if you dare to edit Bret the Threat off of this podcast. Because really, I'm the only guy you should be even conducting interviews with. Actually, I'm the guy that should be conducting interviews on myself. I keep seeing your interview in Shogun, Ice Flames. No, 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 no. Joe DeFalco. Why does Joe DeFalco need to be interviewed? Nobody cares what this guy has to say. They all care what I have to say because I'm the fastest rising prospect in this damn game today.
Well, Joe, I can tell you one thing. This motherfucker does not shut up.
Oh, well, we already knew that. Any way you could cut him off?
I've been trying. I don't know what the fuck he did, but I can't. Jesus.
You know what? No problem, Michael. No problem. Because I have an autograph signing to go to. I have to study some tape on Remy Marcel and Ice Williams anyways and hit the gym to look better than ever. So I'll do you the favor yourself, and I'll cut myself off. I'll see you soon when I'm the champ.
Well, there you go. You know, Bret the Threat has really, you know, made a name for himself very quickly, you know. Sometimes you say, hey, you got to do things the right way, and then you see a guy doing it his way. And unfortunately, you know, it's the sizzle that sells, not the steak.
I don't even know what to say. Jesus. I mean, oh, yeah. I'm sorry you have to deal with this on a constant basis with this guy. And I better work on the password security for the Zoom because I don't want that kind of shit happening again, especially with someone who has no reason to be. Okay, so anyway, Joe, the women's show, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought Maserati looked great with Katrina. I thought that was amazing pairing. And you were speaking earlier of Strella and Sandra Moon. It was a nice little match. You see a lot of when Sandra Moon gets angry and she gives out those visceral screams, man, it just makes me so excited because you see this little happy ray of sunshine and then all of a sudden she is just a bull, and especially with Strella and their rivalry, man, that was a great match.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, you know, I was thinking that the winner of this match would just really move on, and whether it was Strella, that would be the next opportunity for Maserati. But because of the way the ending went down, Sandra Moon really didn't get a clean-cut victory. Even though Strella was the one who removed the turnbuckle, she kind of cost herself the match. Yep. So, you know, we're looking when we come back in 2 weeks on the 16th, as I'm putting together the card, I really think we need to have some finality before somebody moves on. And despite Sandra winning, I think the victory was tainted, and I think she would tell you herself that she would have really wanted to beat Strella, you know, clean 1-2-3 in the middle, and it didn't happen. And I think we're going to, you know, continue that feud and, you know, come up with an idea for the 16th at All Bets Are Off. You know, trying to come up with a nice little concept to where we can have a clear-cut victor in the matchup between Sandra and Strella.
Has there ever been in FSW's history, and I think I know the answer as being no, have you guys ever had a women's steel cage match?
We have not. A few years ago, Heather Monroe and Hudson Envy, who was extremely popular at the time, they had a last woman standing match at Amstown. So, you know, I'm not sure we're going to go into the cage with Sandra and Strella.
Right.
Just yet. But I think that there needs to be some kind of matchup that really, whether it's a no DQ, false count, whatever it is, you know, we're putting the ideas together. You know, we also like to do sometimes, you know, little things where the fans get to pick the stipulation.
Sure.
And we do a drawing and the winner gets to pick, you know, one of the, you know, four matches or five matches that we have an idea for. You know, it worked very successfully in the past, and it's something that we, you know, trying to be interactive and doing different things, you know. So, you know, initially the 16th was going to be a future shock, but we have just too much talent. Right. And we got shows up the yin yang, you know, the 16th, and we got the 24th is going to be big ground zero with Brian Pillman. And then we'll probably take off the 30th. And then we got, you know, a big show the 8th and then the 14th, the day before GCW, we're going to run a very big show called Changing the Game. And so far, you know, a little takeoff of GCW, a little respect to them, to where Leo Rush, Trey Lamar have Ooh. Been confirmed, as well as Hammerstone and our regular crew. And we're also working on, you know, discussing some of the guys that are available that are going to be in town for GCW that week. You know, we're talking with Chris Dickinson. We're talking with Jordan Oliver. You know, my kid came up with a thought that, hey, a good matchup would be the Bad Bitches and Effie against, say, Lights, Camera, Faction.
Oh, wow. You know? Yeah.
So, you know, we're really looking to get put together. You know, that's the first Mecca show returning on the May 14th. April 24th will be big. You know, April 16th, you know, we're still making moves. Toko Uso is going to be back. Sefa Fatu is going to be on the show. So there's no lacking of talent that FSW has. You know, unfortunately, it may cause some of the younger guys to not be on as often. But now we're really ready to step up, and now it's going to be their job to prove that they're deserving of a spot. You know, now the full roster's back in effect. And then, you know, over the pandemic, we've added Tito Escondido and Eli Everfly and Toko Uso and Brandon Gatson. Well, and a Jordan Cruz and a Class. You know, right. Those guys, they are top talent and have been for a long time. So the key is getting them in. You know, who is Randall Russell? You know, who is Class going to, you know, cash in a case against?
Right.
You know, we saw Hype Street disappear after his loss. What happened with him? Shogun and Kenny had some issues after their match. You know, is Shogun going to go back to the singles ranks? You know, I don't think he's too excited about teaming back up with Kenny just because in defense of Kenny, on his plate, and FSW is not a priority. Well, for Shogun, FSW is the priority.
Right.
And his goal has always been to be the heavyweight champion. So, you know, Hammerstone just won the belt. But what happened to the former champ, Graves? What's he going to do? Is he going to want a rematch? You know, there is so much, you know, Unguided are now the tag champs. Well, is Death Proof the number one contender? Or is RMB the number one contender? Because RMB won a four-way that included Death Proof.
Right.
They didn't beat them, but, you know, so there is so much. Ice Williams with the newly formed Ice Camera Faction. You know, we've seen it for a long time with Ice Williams that it really seemed like he was losing the fans and didn't seem to care about it because, you know, he would do whatever it takes.
Right.
And, you know, he pulled a big one out of his ass, I guess you could say, by having Lights, Camera, Faction assist him in taking out Funny Bone.
I think that it's very intriguing, you know, especially with something like that with Ice. You know, and when you talk about feuds and match stipulations and, you know, we just saw AEW pulled out the Arcade Anarchy. Could we possibly see a slot machine slam at FSW?
We had a show that I've always was intrigued by, which is similar to the Raw Roulette. Okay. And we called it luck of the draw. And it would be nice to maybe do, whether it's a tag team thing or just a show, where all of a sudden, you know, Mondo Rocks is teaming up with Danny from the Suavecitos against Adriel and Robbie Litt from Sky High. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, we have a lot of different things on the table. Remy talked about a Battle of the Sexes show, which would feature, you know, mixed tags, intergender matches, and so forth, you know. And you got to remember, we missed a year of, you know, my favorite FSW big shows, right. You know, Against All Odds, 30-Man Rumble. You know, we would space out the four of them, Survival of the Fittest, where we would, you know, put teams together, you know, tribute to the Survivor Series, the original. Right. I used to watch on Thanksgiving night when it was groups of teams, you know, and doing battle, you know. And at Survival of the Fittest, we've also kind of intertwined. Not only is it a Survivor Series type match, but we also would have, say, an Iron Man match. It's Survival of the Fittest. You know, so it would be different types of matches that would, you know, seem to fit that. And then, of course, No Escape, which would feature some cage matches. Usually we went from one to three on a lot of the past events.
Right.
And, you know, there's a fourth that, like, thinking offhand, I can't even recall. Survival of the Fittest, Against All Odds, No Escape. And then I guess you could say our anniversary show is generally the big four.
Right.
You know, and then there's a lot of repeat shows that, you know, we would do seasons beatings during Christmas and New Year's resolution. You know, so there's so many different things that we haven't been able to do. So, you know, we might go four straight months with big show after big show after big show, you know, just putting out a couple of the flyers for Pillman and Leo Rush and basically saying, hey, we're open for business. I've seen some familiar faces that we haven't seen over the last year, you know, immediately try to buy up some tickets. So,
yeah. You know, speaking of big shows, of course, you guys have the Mecca that you've run now for a number of, you know, I think it's what, 5 years, five Meccas, I believe.
Well, we've run six Meccas, twice a year. But When Stars Collide was basically the first Mecca until we came up with the name change. So in reality, we've run seven.
Okay. When you think of Mecca, is that idea essentially to you, or is it the anniversary show to you, what you consider your WrestleMania, since it's WrestleMania weekend? You know, did WrestleMania influence either of those shows? Or just in general, was WrestleMania an influence on you and getting into owning your own company?
Obviously, you know, I grew up with wrestling. You know, I took a hiatus. Once you got to be a teenager, you did other things. And I drifted out. And I remember WrestleMania 1. Didn't really pay that much attention. I probably paid more attention because it was MTV stuff where you would see what was going on. Then WrestleMania 2 came on. I remember I was at Westchester Community College, and I remember, didn't really watch it or nothing, but I remember it was like King Kong Bundy and Hogan, and there was two main events, and, you know, there was two venues that were housing it. But WrestleMania, after WrestleMania 2, I kind of got back into the wrestling stuff. And Randy Savage, you know, was probably my all-time favorite at that point. You know, I thought him and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat at WrestleMania 3 was the greatest match I had ever seen. You know, and from WrestleMania 3 on, I was nonstop watching, you know, had a cheater box, watched every pay-per-view. I even used to watch the old TNA pay-per-views that were weekly. The problem was, it's funny, over the last 5-6 years, I've watched far less live wrestling on television just because it isn't the same. The stories aren't there. There's no ending. It's when you watch a movie, even when there's a sequel, you have an ending to that movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, again, hey, who's Randy Orton feuding with? Oh, he's feuding with Bray Wyatt again. Like, wait, didn't they just do that? And they made Bray Wyatt disappear for 6 months. And now they're back again, because that's what I want to see. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when it came to our shows, no, you know, we started, we ran a show. It was like, hey, it's a year later. Hey, it's our first anniversary show. You know, it's perceived as something a little bigger. It's like, hey, we're celebrating that. Fuck, we've run a show for a year. You know, that's great. And then all of a sudden, it was two. And then I was like, oh, shit, what a big deal. We're at five. Wow, five's a big number. And at 10, we really made it special.
Yeah.
Like the 10-year anniversary, we had all the hype behind it. We offered $10 general admission tickets. Our wrestlers sold shit tons. We had the biggest crowd we ever had at Sam's Town, close to 1,000 people there. And it was a fantastic show that featured almost all the localized talent. And when I say localized, I'm talking California and Arizona. They count to me. Guys that we would use on a regular basis.
Right.
The Mecca, to me, is the super show. But it's more the super indie show. You know, Ring of Honor was the reason why we did the Mecca. When we first did, it was called Pride, Honor, Respect. That was the idea of running the day after Ring of Honor. They did their anniversary show for the first time. They did it at the Orleans Arena. And we followed suit the next day. And we had Silas Young. And we had Rocky Romero. And, of course, we had Kenny King. And the Reno Scum, who had wrestled in the pre-show the night before at Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
And we had a show at Silverton. And we had the lowest draw of any casino show we had done that year.
Wow.
And it was understandable. We didn't have big name talent. A lot of the Ring of Honor fans who would come in didn't really know who we were. We had a couple of the, you know, low to mid card guys in Ring of Honor. So we weren't doing it at Sam's Town at the time. We had the falling out. So, but we helped out because, you know, we would help them with the crew and everything. So I remember going to Sam's Town and talking with the people there, because I believe that was the next year. I don't think we did a show the first year after when Ring of Honor was at the Orleans. It was at Sam's Town that we did it the next day at Silverton. And it was like, oh, when you guys coming back? And it's like, well, not when you fucking rob us on your feet when we're bringing this talent to you. Like, I had Ring of Honor guy call the Sam's Town guy to talk, because Ring of Honor had to rent all the stuff to use a ballroom at the Orleans.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, this is a better fit for you, blah, 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 blah. The deal get hooked up. And all of a sudden, they're raising the rate on Joe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so what happened was we ran that show. And even in the main event, it was a great main event. I believe what we did at that show was we had a Impact guy, which was Willie Mack. We had a Ring of Honor guy, which was probably Kenny King. You know, we had an FSW guy, which I believe was Sean Ricker at the time, who may have been the champ. I'm not even sure. And I believe, you know, we had a AAA guy. I'm not even sure who the four in there was, but I think it was a Lucha Underground guy. It might have been Brian Cage.
Sure.
You know, might have been Cross at the time. I think Cross was probably the champ, not Ricker. And we did that four-way battle. And it was like, wow, this thing, you know, we didn't get killed, but we definitely did not have a lot of people. You know, Ring of Honor was charging $85 for front row. And then they were charging $75 for second row and $65 for third row. You know, you're in the sixth row and it's still more than our front row. So people were kind of spent out Friday and Saturday with Ring of Honor to worry about the Sunday show. And as the time came for the next Ring of Honor show, I had an idea. I called up Brian Cage and I'm like, hey, Brian, this is the idea I'm looking to do. You know, the fans, it's nothing special. They can miss an FSW show and just come to the next one. This is a big weekend. There's going to be a lot of out of state, out of country fans coming for Ring of Honor's anniversary show. So the idea is, what can we do to get some of those fans to come to our show?
Right.
So I figured out the idea of, hey, what if we did our own Wrestle Circus type of show, who was getting some steam in Texas? And I knew we had Brian, and I knew we had, you know, some of the guys that we had become friendly with over time. You know, he had mentioned Keith Lee to me. That was like the number one guy, and we set that match. And, you know, we contacted Davey Richards, and we contacted, you know, as much talent as we could. And, you know, Willie Mack, as usual, you know, a Jeff Cobb, who couldn't do that one. He did the next one. But the idea was trying to make this super show, and it worked. Where I remember being in Sam's Town the night before at the Ring of Honor pay-per-view with my swiper, literally selling tickets before the Ring of Honor show was actually starting.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think we got something here. And we called that When Stars Collide. And, you know, I even believe Matt Hardy was on the show. Because I think Matt ended up showing up with Jeff the day before at the Ring of Honor. Don't hold me to it, you know. Everything kind of groups together.
Sure.
But I remember seeing a flyer, and I remember with Davey Richards, because he didn't show, that we made it a three-way with Sammy Callahan that killed it. You know, and at that point, we didn't really use any FSW talent.
Right.
You know, this was just a super show. And then we incorporated the Hammerstones to see how he would do when he had him work Callahan. And we started influxing more and more of the FSW guys. So instead of branding the Mecca, which initially the idea was totally separate, different company. But it's like FSW has enough of a fan base. We have a history that including the Mecca as part of FSW was the wiser decision.
Right.
And that's where we went with the Mecca. And we ran it every 6 months whenever Ring of Honor was here, because we felt we would get a better turnout. You know, our regular FSW fans are great, but there's only so many of them.
Right.
When you have other 500, 800 people that are coming into town, now all of a sudden, by the third one, the fourth one, hey, we're coming to town, you're running a show. Now these people have become, you know, our Facebook friends and our Twitter followers. So now a lot of these out-of-state people were aware of what we were doing, you know. And even the last one we did in March, we had pre-sold a few $1,000s for the next Mecca, which we were going to run AEW weekend.
Right.
And we were going to run it that Sunday. And we had set up the tournament at Mecca 6. And, you know, we were going to have the semifinals and finals of the Mecca Grand Championship Tournament. And, of course, that all went by the wayside. But, you know, that's the origin of everything that went on, you know, with the Mecca and bringing in, you know, whether it was the Rascals, you know, it's like, you know, Matt Riddle, Jeff Cobb, you know, look at the biggest stars of independent wrestling and, you know, people that actually were signed, you know, Cross wrestled John Morrison on the first show that we had. He wrestled Tommy Dreamer later, you know, he wrestled, you know, match after match after match, you know, and Ray Phoenix and Pentagon Jr. And it was like all the dream guys that we wanted in FSW ring. You know, I've been wanting, I wanted Pentagon in Phoenix since the day we decided to do a show, you know, and, you know, we got that opportunity. And, you know, we were hoping that, hey, Mecca 7, it's coming Memorial Day weekend. And then it was like, oh, AEW is going to Florida. So it doesn't make sense for us to do that because we're just not ready.
Right. When you think of, you know, you said you don't get a chance to watch a lot of wrestling just because of, you know, the storylines and et cetera being a little, you know, overplayed. Is there anything that you're looking forward to coming up here for either NXT or WrestleMania itself? Do you think that Cross ends up beating Balor?
You know, that's an interesting thought because it's like, okay, is Cross ready to roll into the main roster?
True.
If WWE feels he is, it probably wouldn't make sense for him to win the championship.
Right.
Because when he lost the championship, they had to do a tournament to crown a new champion. So are they going to make him win and then leave again to do another tournament to crown another champ? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If he wins and he's leaving, then obviously they have to vacate, you know? So it's hard for me to believe that with his momentum, he's not happy. To me, he has to win because, right, you know, Finn's the veteran. You know, he's holding the belt in place, having his great matches, but Cross is supposed to be their superstar. So it's almost like, to me, like a reset button to get Cross right back to where he was when he won the title, except it's, you know, 7-8 months later.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, of course, you know, looking forward to that. You know, WrestleMania, you know, I saw they announced, you know, Lashley and Drew to be the main event. And I personally think Lashley has some good juice behind him. But I really believe that they want to see if McIntyre can get the response and be that guy.
Right.
You know, he didn't do it with Lesnar.
Right.
You know what I mean? When he beat Lesnar, if he was in front of 25 or 50,000 people and beat him the way he did, you know, I thought that would have been the huge turning point. But being that everybody who watched it on TV in front of a no crowd, you know, the WWE wants to see if McIntyre is the man.
Right.
You know, and see how those fans, because, you know, it's been a long year. And the wrestling's been difficult because it's been in empty arenas. And, yeah, they run with some people that are mainly wrestlers and things like that. But it's not a fan. It's right. Not a crowd. Like, we did one empty arena show. And shockingly to me, it went way better than I thought it would be.
Sure.
It's there was energy in there. You know, we did live commentary. You know, we had the students in the bleachers so they could make some noise. And it was all right, you know, for me, because I was there live.
Right.
My question is, how did our fans feel about it? I don't know. They got to watch it on the network. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, now we're hoping that fans are coming back to the shows, and being that it's a long year and Drew's been the guy the entire time, you know, that ship may have sailed. You know, I don't know. It may be like, yeah, we seen Drew and he beat Orton and he beat this guy and he beat Lashley earlier and he beat Lesnar. And now it's like, okay, what's new and exciting?
Right.
Because especially in WWE, you know, you need new and exciting. Or old and exciting like Edge. You know what I mean? It's
right,
like,
right.
You know, where do you go with Drew? Does he win? You know, a lot of times it's like, okay, with having the fans there now is the perfect time for the new restart, the new regime. So that's what makes me think, hey, there's a good chance that it could be Lashley. Like, hey, we're going to have Lashley be a dominant champion, and he's going to beat Drew in front of the big stage in the main event. And now we can move forward with Lashley.
Right.
At least give him that opportunity. Because maybe 6 months down the road, maybe Drew is the guy to take the belt off of.
Right.
So, you know, I can go on my website that I bet sports, and I could bet that match. And it's pretty much a pick a match. You can't, you know, none of the spoilers are out. You don't really know. You know, a lot of times it's like, oh, you got to bet $1,000 to win $100.
Right.
Well, you know, in wrestling, things can change, especially with Vince McMahon. So it's like right now, and even at a pick 'em, I have no idea. I personally just feel that they want to see Drew get the response, but I can also see 1,000% why they would want Lashley to win.
Right. Along those same lines, what happens in terms of, and you know, you've booked three-way matches like the SmackDown Championship match, you know, where you have three established stars. Does that make it harder to, like, are you going against maybe an instinct or going with an instinct on deciding who wins a match if the storyline isn't playing out like a particular way? So, you know, if you had three guys and you go, okay, any one of these three guys, I could toss up a coin and they would be a good champion. With that kind of talent and that kind of, you know, veteran presence, fan acknowledgement, do you do something like put the belt on Daniel Bryan? Do you keep it on a Roman Reigns? Does Edge get it because he's, you know, kind of the tweener between the two, where he's kind of a face and kind of a heel? I mean, how does that work for a booker in that situation? And have you ever had that experience where you've had, you know, a three-way match where you had three solid competitors where you could go any way, and that actually might help keeping the fans guessing?
Well, first, I think Roman Reigns right now is the best character on WWE television.
Yeah.
So, does it matter if he loses? Absolutely not. We're in a time where, you know, they change the belts as much as people change their underwear. You know what I mean? Like, if a guy holds the belt for 3 months, it's a long time these days.
Right.
You know, when Hulk Hogan had it, you know, it was years.
Yeah.
So when he finally lost it to Ultimate Warrior, it's like, oh my god, I can't believe it. It finally actually happened. So the fact of the matter is, in the WrestleMania main event, let's just say Roman Reigns loses to Edge. Guess what the main event next month's gonna be? Edge against Roman Reigns.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, with Roman Reigns, who does he really have to wrestle? You know, who's a contender that people look at and say, oh, you know, this is a threat? Like, they were building it up, and you could see they kind of slowed it down because they knew they weren't going to get Roman Reigns against The Rock, which would have been a money match of all time if it would have happened this year.
Right.
Especially Heyman and The Rock, and they would have built up the head of the table gimmick, you know, and all that stuff. But right now you got Edge, who's you know, closing in on 50, who didn't wrestle for a bunch of years. You know, he's a great story. He wrestled Orton, came back, you know, got hurt again. You know, how safe are you feeling by putting the belt on Edge?
Right.
You know, Dan Bryan, he got added at last minute. Like, to me, it's like, you know, did they add him because they're concerned that Edge may not be able to go at the level he once had? Because, you know, Edge was fantastic.
Right.
And, you know, despite maybe being really, really good, you know, as a big WrestleMania matchup, you know, maybe they didn't feel comfortable with going with Edge against Roman Reigns, you know? and they added a guy who was extremely popular, just like they did the last time with Daniel Bryan, because they shit on Batista. And despite the fact that people liked Batista, which they did, you know, the fact was at that point, Daniel Bryan was red hot and they gave him the belt.
Yeah.
Right now, Edge and Daniel Bryan aren't red hot. Roman Reigns is. So yeah, to me, that would mean to keep the belt. You know, the closest thing we came to it was when Ricker, Eli Drake, LA Knight became
was
champion.
Was that the match, Joe? Ricker versus Eli Drake?
It was the three-way between them. You know? And Kevin Cross got his rematch. And then midway through the match, Hammerstone cashed in the case, but wasn't able to put him away like usually when you see Money in the Banks and stuff like that.
Right.
The guy takes advantage, especially as the heel. But Hammerstone wasn't a heel at the time. He was a babyface. But he came in, he didn't get the job done. So now we kind of had a full three-way match between Cross, Eli Drake, and Hammerstone.
Yeah.
At that point, I'm pretty sure nobody had an idea who would win. I think most people probably thought Cross would get the title back, you know, but that's when we decided to pull the trigger with a guy who was fresh, and then we were going to do a heel turn right after the match, turning on his partner who congratulated him, and then he shit all over the fans. And that became great for business.
Yeah.
And that was the day Hammerstone became a superstar in the eyes of FSW fans. He was always a star. You know, in Gods of War with Graves, they were one of the most popular guys, tag teams that we had. But now he was on the level of the main guys, the Brian Cages who became, and Eli Drakes and Cross, and the way people perceived the Kenny King. You know, these were the name guys. Matt Hardy when he was around, you know. Yeah. And Hammerstone now, you know, climbed to the top of Mount Olympus, where he was born, by the way. And he became our champion, and that's how we made him the superstar that you currently see today.
When you think about the overall impact that a big show like WrestleMania has had on wrestling since the first one in 1985, can you feel that WrestleMania survived the toughest time, and that was right before the Monday Night Wars, in that period of like 92, 93, 94, 95, when typical viewership was down? And I think a lot of it has to do with kind of what you said earlier, that fans at that point were now basically teenagers, the ones who had grown up with WWF as, you know, as a kid, were becoming teenagers and early 20s. If WrestleMania would have, let's say, failed at some point within the first 10 years or so, would wrestling had survived the fall of a WWF if they couldn't do it? You know, would WCW have been able to survive? Would wrestling now possibly be just smaller companies with more so local TV deals, almost like it was in the territory days?
I think because of, you know, I think it would be really difficult for the territories to continue, just because, you know, in Oklahoma in 1984, there wasn't the reach other than, say, WWE. You weren't going to be able to get the Ring of Honors and Impacts and New Japan's,
right?
You know, WWF had to spend millions and millions of dollars to become broadly across. AWA was a national company.
Right.
But they were based out of Minnesota, but they couldn't hang. They didn't have the budget. they weren't paying those guys. So, you know, look at an AWA show, you know, a year and a half before WrestleMania, and you had, you know, 20 guys who were now in WrestleMania. You know, you had Shawn Michaels and the young Marty Jannetty, and you had Hogan, and you had Big John Studd, and you had, you know, they had their guys that stayed there, the Kurt Hennings, the Nick Bockwinkles, but Nick was probably 50 years old by then. You know what I mean? And it was, you know, all those guys, Superfly Snuka, they all came over because, hey, we're running nationally. We're running all over the United States. There's too much money to be made as a wrestler there.
Right.
You know, you can only make so much wrestling the Oklahoma, Texas, Nebraska, Arkansas territory. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Bill Watts, as great as Mid-South was, you know, and they were able to, you know, get 15,000 people there, or in, you know, Nashville, you know, which had its big territory. And they, the thing is, Nashville probably still had one big territory, but all the others probably became nothing,
right?
You know, and there's too much. And especially nowadays, now everything's on YouTube, everything's on Twitter, everything's on social media. You know, we would have been okay being the Vegas company that could, but because of everything going out there, why shouldn't we strive to be bigger than that?
Right.
We know we have fans in New York, and we know we have fans in California and Chicago and Florida and stuff. You know, our goal is, how do we get more of them?
Right.
You know what I mean? And what would have cost me millions of dollars that I do not have costs a fraction of the amount. And that's why you see a million companies out there.
Right.
Because it's easy to run a show. It's like, as I said, my biggest argument was when we first went on TV for commercials to get the word out, we had to spend money.
Right.
Now, you go on Facebook, you get friends, you go on Twitter, you go on Instagram, you post stuff. The cost to promote a show, you know, is 1/20th of what it was. You know,
right.
Anybody could book a show for, you know, $1,000, even less, because they use a bunch of garbage, or let's just say inexperienced younger wrestlers.
Right.
And then they mix in a couple of guys that are worth the shit in that area. You know, I'm not even talking about going out and spending hundreds of dollars
right.
to bring in, you know, a semi name who used to work for WWE for $500 or whatever.
Right.
And a flight. You know, you're already almost $1,000 there. I'm talking about using the local talent, kind of like we do, but the difference is, we use 12 or 14 of those guys on a show instead of 3 or 4, and then just put filler in the rest, because the 6 people are the ones who cost 90% of the budget.
Right.
And then you got students who are working for nothing and $20, and they're trying to get experience, which is great. But which is also the biggest problem in FSW, that we have some good talent, but they're not ready for that prime time stuff. When you're talking like the Creature Features and the Sky Highs and you know, a lot of our, you know, younger guys that are trying to get in the mix, that when we bring in, as we said, the Eli Everflies and the Toko Usos, you know, how many tag teams can you have on one show? You know, generically, 2 is probably enough at best.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a third. But if you got Unguided, Death Proof, RMB, Toko Usto, Bad Bitches, that's 5. And then you're trying to get Sky High, Creature Feature, Suavecitos, and I won't even count Chase and Nick, because they're a young team. They're not even they're not even the Suavecitos yet. But now you're talking 8 teams. Well, unless you do a 4-way tag and you're trying to get everybody on, that's 4 matches.
Right.
Well, FSW has 5 champions. So if we put every champion on the card, you got Unguided, you got Hammerstone, you got Remy, you got Maserati, and you got Ice Williams. So that's five matches.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if Unguided's not defending against Death Proof, well, okay, maybe Death Proof's wrestling RMB because that's the main match. Got to have it. Okay, now you're at six matches. Now, you got a guy who's got a cash in the case. Is he going to wrestle on the show? Well, he works pretty frequently. That's seven matches.
Right.
You know, are you Funny Bone this show? Maybe not. And that's why a guy like Funny Bone's not a regular. He's a guy that we use, but he's on our roster for since day one.
Yeah.
But we kind of pick and choose, you know. A Shogun, a Hiro Lu, two up-and-coming guys that they're not here. They may not be here, but they're closer to here than here.
Right.
So they're going to have to work the Tito Escondidos and now Graves because he's not the champion. He's got to get those guys matches.
Right.
And that's kind of why we're running the 16th and the 24th, because now we can bring in a Brian Pillman against Hammerstone. And probably not have Hammerstone on the 16th, and maybe not have Maserati on the 16th because we're going to do Strella and Sandra Moon again, because we can't do 10 matches. You know, the last show went four fucking hours. You know, and yeah, 35 minutes was because of the ring, and we had to change out the canvas, but it was still too long.
Right.
You know, did we have to do Sefa Fatu and Daivari on that show? No, we didn't. But the stars aligned. They were both available. We're trying to make this the best show ever that we've done in a year. And they had a really good match. So now we had that match added.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But to me, 2 hours and 40 minutes is more than enough. So even if we didn't do that match, we're still at 3 hours.
Right.
And we're still probably over 3 hours. It's probably 3:10, you know? So that's the thing with the talent wise. While, you know, a guy who runs a show and some of, you know, the other local shows in town, you know, they're going to use a couple of good guys, and then they're going to mainly use 95% of the local talent base.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just gets overcrowded. Like I try to tell my guys, you know, when there's three shows in town, pick two.
You don't have to pick us.
I don't give a fuck. Pick two. What are you bringing to my product if you're a young guy who's got a handful of matches, who I absolutely understand they need experience and they need reps to get better? Okay. I don't say don't work Versus. I don't say don't work Big Valley. All I say is don't work every show in town, you know? And you have to make yourself have some value.
Right.
If you're everywhere, you don't have that value. You're not going to get better. You're going to get better going to Arizona and going to California. And I don't care if you're wrestling the same guys you wrestle in FSW there, because it's a totally different market. You need to get over there. But our local loyal fan base, especially with the pandemic, where it's taken our fan base of this and turned it into this because that's all we could put it in there.
Right.
Lots of people go to the other two shows in town, okay? So by going to those other two shows in town, well, it isn't going to be that exciting because, oh, well, Fresco's dead at every show.
Right.
Oh, okay. So what value does Fresco have compared to Hammerstone? You're only going to see at FSW. Graves, you're only going to see at FSW.
Right.
And even the other companies, they have some of their guys. Super Beast is running some stuff. And he's got guys that are only working their show. So now if you want to see that guy, well, I just saw him for $10 or $15 somewhere else. Why would I want to pay $30 to see him over there?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's convoluting the market, you know? And when you can only put upwards of 100 people in a show, you're not really hurting anybody. So in reality, it doesn't matter. It matters when we're able to open things up again. And it's like, oh, shit. Well, at Sam's Town, we have to charge more money because we have to pay for the venue.
Right.
We have to try the best talent we can bring. we need to differentiate our show than the other show. If we're feuding Sky High and Creature Feature, and then they're wrestling over there, and then they're wrestling over there, who really, I don't care if they're at our show at that point. I probably wouldn't do the match.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very, very interesting thing to hear in terms of you know, thinking about that in the context of the locality and running three different promotions and choosing, you know, your spot essentially as a wrestler. As we wrap up here, Joe, anything else you want to share with the audience in terms of the upcoming shows? You know, if we want to run down the schedule really quick again, too, so they know. And is everything going to be available through either network subscription or pay-per-view on the network or pay-per-view on Fight TV?
In most cases, the big shows like April 24th and May 14th are going to be on pay-per-view. April 24th, I believe we're going through our network for the pay-per-view. May 14th, being that we have the reach of a Leo Rush and a few other mainstay names, I feel the promotion from Fight TV will help generate more business.
Yeah.
You know, again, you know, we're taking this one where we get this much, and we have this one which gives us that much, but this one has this much of a fan base while we have this much of the fan base from the network. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So it's like, they all have their advantages. They all have their disadvantages. April 16th, we're probably going to do a network exclusive event. The 24th, like I said, FSW Network pay-per-view. We're changing it up a little bit. So the way it isn't if you're a non-subscriber, you pay $15. If you buy the pay-per-view for $15, you get the network for the month.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just included. So instead of back and forth, and it's like, you know, some people are confused. Hey, I just bought the pay-per-view. Well, now you get to witness what's going on. You get to see Zoe Stark, and you get to see Karrion Kross and Chris Bey and all these other guys and the network exclusives and some of the funny shows and some of the other shows. And now you have a month to see, hey, you know what? For $7, this is worth it. Because then if I buy the pay-per-view next month, that's $8. I'm at 15 anyway. Well, I have the network. So we'll just let it keep rolling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the advantage there. The 30th we're taking off, just like this week we're taking off. You know, half the roster is going to Florida anyway. Then we come back with Saturday, May 8th. We're looking at doing a pretty big show, probably another network one. And then May 14th, the GCW weekend. So the Friday, Saturday, they're running two different shows. I'm not sure the other one. It's WrestleCella or something like that. It's Jimmy Iovine from California.
Sure.
Who's that one. And, you know, they're bringing in some good talent, absolutely, for that. So, you know, and then we're looking at trying to pick off, like I said, some of the guys. We're also trying to finalize what's going on, where we're doing. And then, you know, we're probably going to take off the 22nd week, or we run the 22nd and take off Memorial Day weekend. So we haven't decided if we're doing 3 weeks in a row or we do 2 weeks, take off, and maybe run like a Future Shock at the end of May.
Well, everyone, thank you for tuning in again. Subscribe to the network if you haven't. I highly recommend signing up for half year or for a full year, just a little bit cheaper that way. Again, I apologize to listeners who had to sit through the interruption by Brett the Threat, which I got to work on that security because I don't want that happening again. And looking forward to WrestleMania weekend to be over so we can get back to the live shows at FSW, Joe.
Well, you know, we, the crazy thing is, you know, we had to do the distancing and we had to move the ring at the last show. Fortunately, nothing broke. It was a little difficult, but, you know, everything seemed to run smoothly. We're just hoping now in the next couple of weeks, you know, we'll be able to expand, you know, the seating.
Right.
We're just hoping they in a couple of feet because we're just short of the 12-foot rule if we left it in the middle. So we're hoping, you know, the latest May 1st when the cities take over city, the county, whatever it is, it's local authorities say, you know what, we're going to go back to 6 feet all the way around. You know what right. I mean? Being the CDC now said, oh, yeah, by the way, Lysol and Clorox and all that shit is unnecessary. I read that today on there that, you know, you can catch it, but the odds are like 1 in 10,000.
Yeah.
The majority of catching the virus is airborne. So it's like, well, you know, Lysol wipes and, you know, Clorox, they made $10 billion during the pandemic to now for us to be told. And they raised the prices like double if you could find them in the store.
Right.
And now it's like, yeah, you know what? You really don't even need that. But came out with it now after everything is like in the downward spiral.
Well, everyone, I hope that you enjoyed this episode here. Again, follow the Vegas Bad Boys and all of the podcasts that we release during the week. And, of course, follow FSW. And I'll tell you right now, if you tune into the network, you're never going to find yourself yawning like Joe just did, because there's a lot of great stuff, a lot of great action on there. And it's definitely worth checking out. And until next time, everyone, we'll see you then.
See you then.